Blog Talk Radio.
Joining us for Three Women, Three Ways. We are the show that tackles some important topics when it comes to human rights and human relationships and the situation for women and men around the world. And we have a very special guest today, Rita Henley Jensen, and she's just one of my favorite people in the whole world because she came up with one of my most favorite websites in the world, which is Women's E News. And if you've never had a chance to visit that, you must do so. It is. I have to explain, Rita, that my undergraduate degree is in journalism, and so I started out this life as a writer and a newspaper writer. And as the years have gone on, I've become very cranky about how cavalier we are and how inaccurate and how casual we are about news writing in this day and age, not only content, but also just, you know, the way it's written. And it is always such a breath of fresh air to visit Women's E! News, because not only are the topics important and well-written and well-researched, they are done in a very professional way. So kudos to Women's E! News. If you haven't had a chance to go there, please go. Updates on what's happening with women and women's rights all around the world. And it's just an eye-opener. Welcome, Rita.
Thank you, and thank you for your high praise.
It's true. It's true. Everything from the research that's done, you know, in this day and age of, what we call citizen journalism, we get used to things being kind of half-assed and not necessarily well-researched, even in the major media. You know, I can't tell you how many times I'm reading a New York Times article when I'm thinking, really? We're using these adjectives in a news story. Okay, fine, you know. And to read Women's E! News, yes. It is just a breath of fresh air. The level of professionalism is outstanding and exemplary.
We're going to try to download that and post it on our website. So
good.
Yes, and tweet it.
Things are important.
Yes, I agree. Well, I agree 100%, 190%. But by the way, Heather, I just tweeted out to all my followers that I'm going to be on your program and gave them the phone number to call in. So let's hope some of them do. Yeah.
Good, good. Well, we don't have a real rigid schedule of what we're going to talk about today, and we don't need to, because what we're going to do is we're going to have an update on what's happening in women's situations around the world. Now, I know one of the topics that we've really been focusing on, I've got the hiccups. You're going to have to forgive me here, Rita. But one of the topics that we've been spending a lot of time on locally is women's reproductive rights and what's happening with that in this country. We've seen lots of proposed legislation. We've seen lots of restrictions. We've seen lots of healthcare-related issues, and all of them are having an impact on women and their reproductive rights. But that's just not solely a U.S. problem, is it, Rita?
No, I think that's a global problem. And it's also, I would say, it's a full range problem. It's, you know, it's an FGM as a girl enters her adolescence. Is it the lack of sanitary napkins when a girl needs to go to school and doesn't have the resources to avoid the embarrassment and the discomfort? Is it the lack of enforcement of incest or rape of teenagers? The rape of teenagers is just enormous. And the shame connected to rape, if you are the rapist rather than the rapist, which is extraordinary turnabout, and then information about controlling your fertility as soon as you need it, before you need it, the access to contraception, treatment of sexually transmitted disease, the high rate of HIV/AIDS among women in the United States, and and the restriction on abortion, which reflects this lifelong attempt to control women's reproductive processes, and a lifelong neglect of the proper care and treatment of women and teens, right? It starts in the teens, wherever you are, wherever you are.
Yeah.
Which actually was
well, you
of
had,
an answer.
You know what? I mean, it's like a never-ending thing. It's, you know, what was it, back in the 70s, we used to say the power is the political or whatever, where it, you know,
the
reproduction is political. Reproduction is political. And, you know, harking back to one of my favorite books of all time, which, you know, thankfully they have updated, is For Her Own Good. Do you remember that book?
No, I don't. Tell us more.
Well, when I first found it, when I was nothing but a wee girl, it was subtitled 100 Years of Advice to Women, of the Experts' Advice to Women. And they're still doing that book, and now the subtitle is 150 Years Advice to, of the Experts' Advice to Women. And basically, it's such a good book because it points out how what we consider best for women, what the experts consider best for women, really depends on what the political climate is, either what we want to enforce for, I'm thinking back to, okay, during World War II, all of a sudden it was just fine for grandma to raise the kids. It was just fine for the kids to be in daycare because guess what? We needed those women in the factories. Boom, World War II ends. We don't want those women in the factories anymore because the men are coming back home and we have to give them back their jobs, right? And so now all of a sudden, you're just going to scar your child for life if you have somebody other than loving mama watch that child forever. You know what I'm saying?
Actually,
and
yes.
So,
and while you were speaking, I don't want to cut you off, but I will. we have a women's history tour. We're based in New York. Please find out more about it by going to our website. And the first stop is at City Hall Park, where Margaret Sanger, the federal courthouse used to be there, and Margaret Sanger was indicted there. And she had to fled the United States because of Anthony Comstock and making sure that she was indicted and the political atmosphere looked very bad, like she would be convicted and go to prison. So she fled to Canada, then England, until Comstock died a couple years later and the mood changed and she could come back and do her work.
Yep. The political dictates what medical, psychological, you know, I mean, economic, you know, the political dictates what all those experts have to say are the best things for women. And that book is just, you know, I mean, it's a classic. It's an absolute classic. And when I was very young, it was a real eye-opener for me. But in our conversation that we're having today here, what are we talking about? We're talking about the political. Political influences the day-to-day lives of women and what we think is best for women, no matter what country we're in. So, you know, nothing has really changed. I want to throw out our phone number if you're out there and you want to join our conversation, if you have a topic about women that you want to bring up or maybe even history or something that's happening in other countries, 646-378-0430. That's 646-378-0430. And also, if you go to the blogtalkradio.com/3women3ways, and those are digits 3, not spelled out, You'll also see where you can click into our chat room. So if you don't want to do the telephone thing, you can post a question or a comment in our chat room, and we can talk about that. Rita, recently,
yes.
As in the last couple months, I've been reading in Women's E-News about things going on in Europe. You know, we're talking about
yes.
the war on women in the United States, but it looks like the European Union is not too terribly far behind. I mean, Spain has a very conservative government, and they're talking about tightening up that country's fairly liberal abortion law. France is trying to liberalize its abortion and gender-related policies. And, you know, what's happening in Europe when it comes to reproductive rights?
Boy, you're so right, and thank you. And I want to throw in that was a reporting trip that was supported by, I believe, an Indiegogo campaign, but a social media, one of those things like Kickstarter, and we
mm-hmm.
pitched it to the people who are online, and they supported it, and we were able to send two reporters, our managing editor, Juhi Bhatia, and our staff reporter, Hajur Niali, to both France and Spain to take that temperature. And we were surprised that England sort of started it, but now it's taking its speed in Spain, and France has more liberal rules, but women are still, especially in the rural areas, have difficulty obtaining. And we focused on abortion, but you know that that's just one of the reproductive health services that we talked about at the beginning, that female teens and women need throughout their life. And
well, you know,
so,
it seems to me that whenever we're talking, you know, we are talking abortion, but it's such a bigger picture than that. And it seems to me whenever we start seeing people that want to put restrictions on abortion, you may as well plug in all those other words, birth control, you know, contraception,
yes.
you know, all of those other things. It seems like, you know, it's the word abortion is interchangeable for all these other things when, in fact, it's a very different thing. But yeah, we're seeing that. So your reporters went to Spain and Europe, and was that the climate in the country, or was this just a section of people? And what did they discover?
Well, I have to interject here. I'm so sorry, but the story we have on our homepage today is about a call for reproductive sovereignty, if you can wrap that around your mind, right? That we take
yeah.
control of this. And it also has an animation that explains how women can do an abortion getting a medical abortion and administering it by themselves. So how to take a certain medication with an 80% effectiveness rate and administer it themselves, whether abortion is legal or illegal in their country. And I encourage everyone to go there and watch the animation. It's fantastic. A woman by the name of Rebecca Gompers started Women on the Waves. And I don't know if your audience knows about that, but she began loading up a vessel, a ship, with basically the medication and the other tools that you would need to have an abortion. And she went over to Ireland and sat outside the international border and began to broadcast the information to the women of Ireland about the availability of an abortion. And so, as you can imagine, all hell broke loose. But she continued.
Yeah.
As she continued, she's fantastic. There's a new film out called The Vessel, and it's a documentary, and I recommend it to everybody. So she's been on a campaign to make abortion available wherever, and it is from the film about her that we have this animation on our website, and then we got somebody else to write a commentary about reproductive health sovereignty. So anyway, yes. So back to Spain, because Women on the Waves visited Spain too. And
wow.
There was a lot of resistance, people on the dock, holding banners and, protesting their presence, et cetera, having trouble with the government, who said that they couldn't stay where they were, et cetera, and what the border of the 12-mile limit was, and et cetera, et cetera. And that incident was in part responsible for her switching from trying to deliver the services to trying to deliver women the information that they could do it themselves and not rely on. And that's scary. I mean, when we talked about it in the staff meeting, we were like, I don't know, this is sort of scary. But on the other hand, not as scary as not having any options at all. So we decided to put it on. So anyway,
what can be scarier than having a child that you can't care for or you're not, that's scary.
I just need to toss this out too. Homicide is the leading cause of death of pregnant women not directly related to the pregnancy. So you may need to do that to save your life. I'm just saying. Anyway, so the reporters go to both Spain and France. And in Spain, it is the Catholic influence, as it is in Ireland. And so, as you say, when you talk about abortion, you have to talk about birth control, too, because they're called conservative, but actually, I don't know what, I think that's a misnomer. I don't know whether we could call them misogynist or religionist or, something that's more accurate than conservative, because conservative says, we want to conserve our money, we want to conserve our planet, we want to conserve our freedom, there's a lot of things we want to conserve. Women want to conserve their health. So it's not conservative. It's religiosity. It is right wing. It's anti-freedom. Whatever it is, it is not conservative.
Yeah.
So yes, there is the immediate threat in Spain has passed, but the last act our reporters did was take photographs of a huge protest in Spain demanding, repeal of the abortion law. So it hasn't gone away. And again, in France, it's more liberal, but there's efforts to rein it in. And at the same time, the facilities are inadequate, et cetera, et cetera. So France is more ambivalent, and I think everybody is ambivalent about abortion. Nobody really
spoke
on how, right. So France is more ambivalent, but if you start saying, but wait a minute, we teenage girls need menstrual pads to go to school, so they need education and resources about that, and let's just start right there and say, okay, they need education and they need the information about what is proper touching and not touching and the consequences of early sex and what you can do about that and testing for sexually transmitted diseases. And women in the United States are the largest growing population with HIV/AIDS.
What? Ooh,
yeah.
I didn't know that. What?
Oh, yeah. And the largest killer of women in Atlanta, Georgia, and I just happen to know this specific case, for the largest killer of women in Atlanta, Georgia, between the ages of 18 and 35, which, are, as you know, the years that if we're going to have a baby, it's probably during those years, between 18 and 35, the largest killer is AIDS.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
I haven't
my
seen that.
God. And I've gotten a couple of press releases in the last week or two, and one of them is from the Elton John Foundation, and, you know, it's an epidemic among women. Well, we're not going to, if they went in for an abortion, they would have a blood test, and they would know.
Yep.
And, yeah, and as AIDS now is in the U.S., is considered a chronic disease, so it can be cared for, but you have to have the care.
Yeah. Well, and that care costs money. It costs big money.
Yeah, and Georgia, as it turns out, did not expand Medicaid.
Did not. Okay.
Did not.
Did not.
Did not.
Boy, oh, boy.
So the resistance
you know,
to
yeah.
So let's go back to, you know, the Affordable Care Act gives all this funding and et cetera for reproductive health and you know, prenatal care and, you know, more than we currently have. And that may explain some of the resistance to the Affordable Care Act. And
it comes down, I think, for a lot of politicians, at least what I hear, is that it comes down to money, that it's going to cost too much, the state too much, blah, blah, blah. But what does it cost the state? I mean, you can't have people dropping dead without it cost, you know, without the state attempting to do something. I mean, surely there's costs for not providing reproductive health as well.
Well, you know,
so,
there you go. I mean, and then the ACA completely funds the first several years, I forget the precise details, of the expansion of Medicaid. And why they don't want low-income people, women, men, children, to receive medical care? You know, they're more likely to be productive workers. That's just the bottom line, right? They're just more likely, if they get care early, to need less care later, et cetera, et cetera. So the economic argument makes no sense, as we all know. What? You're against women receiving prenatal care? What?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Wait a minute. You wanted to have the baby. You know, under certain circumstances, you want to have the baby. You want her to have the baby as long as she's not too young, as long as she's not on welfare, and you want her to have the baby as long as she doesn't have too many of them. And then, but you don't want her to have. It's like, oh my gosh, you know. I mean, every little girl that's born, they should just slap instructions on her hand. This is what you need to do. Be socially acceptable and socially supported.
Yeah, and here's a list of our impossible demands. And the list of things that we're not going to help you with.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We want you to pump out babies, but only under certain circumstances. And if you pump out a baby other than those circumstances, then you're a slut or you're, you know, I mean, it's just like, oh, Lordy. I have to say, though, in all fairness, I think that, you know, I mean, just to throw in the caveat here and to cover my bacon, men also can often get a rough deal. Men don't have babies, so that's not their rough deal isn't in this area. But, you know, society tends to do this to its members, and we as women have that whole reproductive chunk where we're the only ones they do that to. So I'm just throwing in the caveat, man. You don't have to call me. I know that sometimes you get a rough deal too, okay?
But first of all, let's just talk about the massive incarceration of Black men.
And
leaving the Black women, African American women in the community to handle everything by themselves, and
exactly.
including bringing in money. to care for the family.
You know, one of these days I want to do a show on black women and reporting domestic violence. I'm going to write that down for my Tickler file, because there's the whole sociological, you know, there's guilt and everything involved with that, and not having that. In my experience, I don't know, you know, exactly how that works. So I'm going to do a show on that, Rita.
Yeah, I'll try to get, help you line up some really, because it's a huge dilemma. You're going to call the police, on the man you love. Will he live through the experience?
Exactly.
Or will you be arrested too?
Yep. Well, all women have to worry about that, no matter what their racial background.
They might be more vulnerable to being arrested.
Yeah. Could be. I haven't seen those studies. I haven't seen any statistics on that. But it would make it would be logical. Okay, so we're talking about Spain and France and reproductive rights, but we've got a whole slew of countries which Spain and France would be, you know, considered wildly liberal compared to. I'm thinking of the Middle East. You know, what is reproductive health and just health care in general like for women in some of these really repressive Middle East countries, Rita?
Well, I want to turn your attention to Latin America. Oh, yes, because I would say the Middle East, it varies, but it's not a political topic as it is in Latin America, where women are in jail for having an abortion, and doctors are in jail for performing an abortion. And again, I was raised Catholic, so I have to mention that it is the Catholic heritage that these nations' laws and practices reflect. And it's quite alarming. There's been a couple of major cases brought before the International Court of 14-year-olds who were pregnant and wanted an abortion because it was a terrific danger to their health. And whatever the outcome was, it doesn't really change the nation's practices or its law. There is some movement, however, toward recognizing that might not be the best way. Nicaragua, no exception. And
wow.
Yeah, no exception. Maybe I'll repeat that. No exception. And if a woman shows up at the hospital with indications that she tried to do it herself and as such she perforated her uterus or is hemorrhaging or has an infection, etc., jail.
Well, honestly, hasn't that happened? I'm forgetting the state, but there are some women there's a woman, a notorious case where a woman had a miscarriage and she's in jail right now.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember
the
state.
The United States.
Yes, right in the United States.
That's a wonderful state of Kansas.
That's Kansas?
Yeah.
Oh, Dorothy and Toto, what happened?
Really, yes, that happened in Kansas. It was the same week that they tried the law that would permit retail establishments to refuse to serve gay couples. That was the same week. Also in Kansas.
I thought that was Indiana that did that.
Oh, yeah, they did too.
Oh, okay. But they got a lot of publicity on theirs.
Yeah.
We just had a caller drop off. Please call back, 646-378-0430. 646-378-0430. And Rita, I just want to throw out another caveat. You and I are talking about reproductive rights and abortion as a right. I mean, I think that's coming across. And I would just like to point out that, you know, I understand that there are plenty of feminists who are not comfortable with abortion and the idea of having abortion available. So if that's one of, you know, I mean, I don't, I you feel free to call in. I'm not going to bite your head off. I can certainly empathize. I know when my daughter was young, she asked me my thoughts about abortion, and I said, I think abortion is horrible, awful, and terrible, but unfortunately sometimes the horrible, awful, and terrible option is still the better option. So that's my personal feeling about abortion. So I'm not going to bite your head off if you want to call in and you are not in favor of having abortion availability around the world. I mean, that's your opinion and you're entitled to it and you're still welcome to make your comments. Rita, I want to talk about another issue besides reproductive rights that's happening in the world. It's been, what, 20 years since the United Nations status on women in Beijing came forth with some ideas and some platforms for action. And, gosh, we're pretty much right there where we were 20 years ago around the world. When it comes to psychological research and when it comes to employment, when it comes to education, when it comes to poverty, what progress have we really made in the last 20 years around the world when it comes to conditions for women?
I think we've made enormous progress, not as much as we would like, but the... first of all, the awareness and the fact that more girls are going to school. Just that one thing is really significant. I think there's more emphasis and appreciation that you can't do anything about the environment and you can't do anything about reducing poverty without involving women. And the resolution 1325, women have to be at the peace table. It's honored in its breach, but it's there. And it wasn't there before. And that's huge. I think the recognition of rape as a tool of war has occurred in the last 20 years. The focus on rape against women. And we have a great piece on our website about women in India after the horrific rape of the woman who went out to see a movie and got on a van with her boyfriend. That was horrific. And the piece on our cites two different examples of women fighting back and pressing charges against their assailant. That's enormous that the women of India are fighting back because I believe that rape was just totally acceptable. And now not so much.
Good.
Yeah. So the feminists in China are in jail, but the fact is that there are feminists in China who orchestrated a bunch of street protests and otherwise, and it's exciting that there's a feminist movement in China, and we know that historically women in China have been, let's just say, not treated so well, despite whatever the promises were. So that's exciting. I think the fact that ISIS and similar ultra-Islamic sex and violent sex are focusing on violence, but clearly enslaving women and raping women, and et cetera. And one of the pieces that we did from France was about how ISIS was seducing young women to leave their families using social media. And they get there and they're 14 years old and you know, they're married off or required to work in the kitchen or whatever. So I think that's an extreme example that the world is paying attention to. And they're like, oh, my God, that's sort of the flip side of women's rights. And here we see it in extremis of what some people would prefer. And I think that just as the women in India are pushing back, the women throughout the region, and we don't hear so much about it, but one of our 21 leaders has written about it, Nina Ansari, the women there are pushing back. They're educated. They have resources. Many have resources. And they will push back. Not in apparent view right now, but it's happening and it will happen. The women in the U.S. are, I don't know if you saw this map, that it was a map of the U.S. and it was, they colored in every state where women were poorer than men in pink. And every state was pink. You know, what are you going to say? Money.
That's a shocker,
that's
Rita.
So women in Africa, many women are not allowed to inherit land. So when their husband dies, they have to marry their brother-in-law or something. I just went to a recent thing that a benefit for a hospital in Kenya, a maternity hospital in Kenya, and they were selling beads, you know, manufactured in Africa, and I'm like, no, what we need women is not to be making beads, although that's a wonderful craft and beautiful. We need them to have the right to own land. And,
yes, exactly.
What are you doing about that? So money is big, the rights of inheritance, but women in the Middle East, they only get one half of the inheritance, but in the marriage, they're not expected to spend any of that to maintain the family. I don't know what really happens, but the women in the Middle East are not as impoverished legally as the women is throughout Africa. And I think we know, you know, what sex bias does to women's earning capacity. So there you go with money and, you know, legal rights. I would not argue that abortion is a right. It's just a matter of medical best practices.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, I mean, even when I was a kid, people, very conservative people who wouldn't even use the word abortion would be, do you save the mother or do you save the baby? You know, I mean, that was the phrase that we used out in the Midwest that the older folks used. I mean, like I said, they didn't actually say abortion, but, you know,
right.
I mean, abortion is nothing new. It's nothing new. You know, Cleopatra had them, didn't she? You know, I mean, it's nothing new, and it has always been considered rather a private thing between you and your God, if you will. But
well, I thought you were going to say your gynecologist.
Yeah, no. I go straight to the top. But what about, you know, we talked a little bit about the economics here. What about women and employment? Are women in Europe, I mean, women in Europe are like women here, right? I mean, they're pretty much any career is open to them, whether it's likely or frequently women is irrelevant. Is that a true statement?
Well, I don't think we could be quite that broad. When you were talking, I was thinking about Norway, where I have a good friend whose son lives there, is married, and they're expecting their third child. the reason they're having a third child is the support that Norway provides the family, including paid parental leave and good medical care. Yeah. So, you know, that, again, like in the United States, it varies from state to state and community to community. But what they call the Norwegian model is probably the most outstanding, that provides support for the family. And I, what can I say? My good friend, you know, is thrilled that she's able to have three grandchildren who are well taken care of, and her daughter-in-law is also well taken care of, and she has time to take care of these three children.
Yeah, but where does that money come from?
Oil.
Oh, okay, all right. Because I, you know, I mean, I'm going back to my model. Okay, if we have the traditional family unit where one parent works and one parent stays home to take care of the kids, okay, so income is being produced by the one parent. But if all of these people, you know what I'm saying? I mean, the numbers crunching didn't seem to make sense to me. But oh, okay, so it's just kind of like a wealthy country. So okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So we're pretty wealthy, too.
Yeah,
it's
we are.
It's where you spend
your money. Well, speak for yourself, Rita. I have a stack of bills.
Well,
I
yes.
have a definite pink state.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, as a nation, we are wealthy, but yes, the income of the vast majority is shrinking. You're right.
Yeah.
I have
kids that are at the, you know, leave home and get started stage. And my son keeps explaining to me that when I went to college, it was a certain percentage of the average income was the tuition. And now that's changed like fourfold. And, you know, hence all the student debt, you know, that's being accumulated.
Yeah.
And I've been reading these articles about students who paid off their student debt in 3 years, and almost without exception, they did it by moving back home with mom and dad so they didn't have to pay rent.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, that's great if you've got a mom and dad who, you know, are in a position to have you come back home, but not all families are in that position. So I don't know. What about education? We've talked a lot about the finances, but what about education for women around the world?
Well, the focus in most of Africa, and this, you know, I'm not there, is to open the doors to teen girls, and they call them girls. I would say female teens, and it's been a difficulty because, as I mentioned, the lack of sanitary napkins and of sanitary places where young girls, teens, can deal with menstruation. And the taboo about menstruation is one item, but just the inability to manage menstruation. I don't know about you, but it was a difficulty for me during that period of time. And the family needs the girl, the young woman, the female teen home to take care of the other babies. And so people throughout Africa are working hard to tackle all those issues. Yes, you need to, if you have girls, you're going to be much stronger economically, and to persuade the families that their girls need to go to school and should go to school and can go to school. So that's huge. Mm-hmm. In Saudi Arabia and many countries, really in the Middle East, the girls go to school. So at least the Saudi girls, there's a lot of discrimination against people who are not Saudi citizens. And that's true throughout the Middle East. But those who are citizens have access. In Egypt, on the other hand, The infrastructure is so weak that births are not registered. So it's hard to know exactly who is, you know, who is and who isn't going to school. And I would say throughout Latin India, there's a lot of difficulties, Bangladesh, but gradually, and as I mentioned, people, the women pushing it back, India values education so highly that women participate not at the same level as women in the U.S., but a very high rate. Japan, a bunch of discrimination against women in education in Japan. So, again, you know, it's community by community. The major theme is, generally speaking, women are not encouraged to pursue education. A lot of people are working on that issue. Of the Cairo Conference of 1995, they, even with the Vatican's backing, they got this statement approved that the best way to control population is to send women and girls to school. That the more education teen girls and women have, the fewer babies they have. I don't know if it's a correlation or a cause.
I think that, you know, at some point it doesn't really matter whether it's a correlation or a cause. At some point you can kind of say, this is what happens.
Yeah.
So let's keep doing this.
Wait a minute.
What
if,
about...
If I send this child to school, she'll be able to make more money and have a better life and maybe even have fewer children. Well, not everybody thinks that that's a good idea. But if you think that that's a good idea, then, yeah, send her to school.
Yeah. What about Asia? We've talked about Europe. We've talked about Latin America. We've talked about the Middle East. What about Asia? What about the status of women in China and, you know, the other Asian countries?
Well, you know, it's again the broad brush, and when you said Asia, what I thought of Nepal, which so many, if you talk about Nepal, you're not talking about Tibet, and again, but Nepal has a huge problem with sex trafficking. Basically, there's a highway that leads from Nepal down to the sex trafficking capitals of India, which, as you know, so in India, there's in complete villages in which the daughters are trained to be sex workers. That's their expectation. There's a lot of sex trafficking in India, but there is also this highway that comes down from Nepal and to the sex trafficking centers. I think it's not like that in Japan. We don't know so much about what goes on in China, but the women who are in jail were protesting domestic violence and the acceptance of men meeting their wives in public. So China is a big country. And, you know, what about Eastern Russia and Mongolia? I don't know anything about what's going on there, which is separate from, you know, the Western influence, the European Russia. So there you go.
Rita, we have a caller, okay. Rita, that I want to take real quick before we run out of time. Hello, caller, are you there? Hello, caller.
Actually, I am here. I just wanted to say what a great job Rita's doing with Women's E-News and the incredible articles she does. And I just wanted to tell her I appreciate her and what incredible work she's done.
Well, thank you. And you're calling from where?
I'm from Denver, Colorado.
I thought I recognized that area code. Yeah, isn't it a great publication? I mean, I go there. I can't say
fantastic.
I go there every day, but I sure go there frequently.
I just think it's so educational, and it hits every avenue, every women's issue that can possibly be out there, and it shows you the world and what's going on in the world, and I just think it's incredible. So just wanted to congratulate her for her hard work.
Well,
Thank you.
You go, Rita.
Thank you, and donate.
Thank you so much, caller.
Yeah. You're welcome. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, caller, can you think of a question or an area of the world that I might have missed asking about?
Oh, man, I think you did a good job. You do a great job yourself.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. Well, thanks for calling in, Keeping. And don't forget that you can access all the programs through the archive on the webpage. And you can listen to them whenever you want. So thanks for calling, and keep listening, okay?
Thanks, Heather and Rita. Okay, way to go.
Okay, thank you. So, Rita, what kudos for you. See how many lives you touch. It's amazing, really.
Thank you.
Okay, so in Asia, we're not so sure. What areas of the country or of the world have we not addressed at all, Rita?
Well, I mean, you know, I think the main thing it doesn't matter where you go, the discrimination exists. It takes in different forms. But there are certain themes, such as control of reproductive health, violence, whether you're in the Congo and there's conflict and rape, or just in China, wife beating in the street, and certainly in the U.S. as well. I would not claim that the U.S. was better or worse than any other nation. And the fact that certain nations have found strategies and funded strategies that make women's lives better, and they have come to the conclusion that it makes the overall nation better.
One of the things that we didn't talk about are countries that are doing it well. And I have tell you, I visited Iceland a few months ago.
I was
so
just
going to
mention Iceland.
Pardon?
So
I just loved Iceland. I'd go back in a heartbeat, except they won't let my service dog in. But it just is an amazing country and extremely strong women politically, economically. And they really take leadership roles in that country. What do you know about Iceland and what women are doing right there?
Well, we have a piece on our website that says exactly what you're saying. And if you recall, Iceland had a total economic meltdown. And
mm-hmm.
It's a little bit like Rwanda after you know, there was a horrible genocide in Rwanda. And the women said, so many of the men died, the women said, okay, well, we're just going to have to take charge and fix it. And fix it they have done in major ways. I think it's true, Iceland, did not have that kind of carnage, but they had a huge financial meltdown during 2008-2009. And the women clearly said, okay, this is a mess. We're going to fix it, and hooray for that. So I don't think it should take a genocide, and I don't think it should take a financial meltdown. But the facts are that when the goy gets tough, women take charge. And
exactly. You know, several years ago I was talking to somebody and we were having that kind of a conversation, and I said, you know, men just seem to have to, women just move in and get it done. And I said, as an example, I said, you know, Mrs. Lincoln probably said, oh, for God's sake, Abe, just give me the back of the envelope and I'll write the damn speech. You know? Because I think that, you know, I think in a lot of cases that's what it is, you know. And it's always amazing to me, the resources that women are able to rally in order to do something. 100 years ago, when I first graduated from college, I worked for a Girl Scout Council. I did PR for a Girl Scout Council in Ohio. And because of that, there were meetings with Boy Scout people, right? And it always amazed me because you could sit at a meeting with the men, and you'd say, okay, well, we need a new roof on the such-and-such cabin at the camp. And the men would say, okay, I'll contact so-and-so. He should be good for this much money. I'll contact that one. He should be good for that much, you know, blah, blah, blah. You'd go to the same meeting with the women, and you'd say, okay, we need a new roof for the cabin. And they'd say, okay, I'll organize the bake scale. I'll do the daycare. I'll save the yogurt containers. I'll do the, you know. It's it was such a different feel, but it was definitely, you know, get in there and take charge. Rita, we've only got
so
4 minutes left.
So is this the right time for me to say, donate now, go online and support Women's E-News?
Oh, yes, right, absolutely,
okay.
Absolutely.
Organize a bake sale for Women's E-News.
Exactly, exactly. You know, and sometimes I get impatient when, you know, thinking of things that small of a scale. But you know what? Sometimes it works. You know, that's what makes it work. Little by little, piece by piece, person by person, that's how we get things to work. And that, I think, explains the success of places like Kickstarter and GoFundMe. And what was the one you used for your report on Spain?
Indie
Catapult.
Go-go.
Was it?
Yeah.
Indiegogo?
Well, I think you're right. I think it was Catapult.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, it's that where we can each do a little bit and be part of something big, you know. I mean, that's what makes such a difference. So, okay, well, we are 20 years down the road from the UN, United Nations World Conference on the Status of Women, and they said there that what they wanted the world to focus on was making women fully and equally participants in the political, civil, economic, social, and cultural life of this world. And it sounds like we're on our way. Lots of glitches there and lots of, you know, roadblocks, but we're getting there and we're making progress, at least in your opinion. Right, Rita?
Absolutely. And you know, that piece on our website about the women of India, it's just wonderful.
Yeah. Well, and I was mentioning to you off air, Rob Okun, who's a friend of our show, he does a lot with men and feminism, men who support feminism. And he's an author, and he does a periodical. And he just came back a few months ago from a world conference in India on men and the role of men in feminism. So it sounds like India is stepping right up to the plate.
Well, they're trying. They're trying.
Good. Good. They need to after some of the stuff that's gone on there. So,
yeah.
Well, Rita, once again, we have covered and done a wonderful show, I think, on an update on the status of women. And we are happy and honored to have you come back anytime. And like I said, what I'd like to do is to have you and Rob on the same show so that you can talk about feminism in general, both men and women, and what we're doing, what each gender is doing around the world to promote equality and opportunity. I always end the show with a quote, and I hope you like this one, Rita. You know, so many of the quotes that I found about women had to do with male-male relationships, and that's, you know, although that's certainly an important part of life, that's not something I wanted to focus on. So I finally found this quote, and I hope you like it. If you want something said, ask a man. If you want something done, ask a woman. And I think you're a great example of that, Rita, because you went out
Thank
and you.
You
did it. And I think that the publication that you've come up with, Women's E-News, and you can just Google it, and I have it saved to my desktop. I just click on it. Every time I open my computer, I just click on it, see what's new.
Thank you.
Publication, and I thank you for your vision and foresight and sticking with it and producing such an homage, really. Next week, we're going to do a show on rape kits. You remember hearing about rape kits and a huge backlog, and actually there are some states that are making quite a good step in getting those rape kits caught up to date. Some states, not so much. Some states, for example, are charging rape victims to process their own rape kits. So it's an issue, and what can I say? We're going to talk about that next week on Three Women, Three Ways. Don't forget that you can access us anytime on our archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/Three Women, Three Ways. Thank you for joining us. Join us next week.
Thank you so much for asking me to be a guest. Thank you.
You're welcome.